While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some times from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radio News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask what's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon to you, Namibia, and faithful listeners of Eagle FM and faithful listeners of On The Radar News Analysis. Thank you for choosing Eagle FM, the home of insightful conversations and real national dialogue. I'm your host, Nafa Happy Juju, and this is On The Radar News Analysis, where headlines meet context. Now, today is a Thursday, of course, another day again on the calendar, back to school, the 15th of January, 2025. Now, across the country, the new year has officially found its rhythm. Alarm clocks, of course, continuing to ring louder. School uniforms are back in hangers, and lunch boxes have reclaimed their place on the kitchen counters. Some packed with care, others packed in a hurry, and many reflecting the realities of rising food prices and tight household budgets. Of course, beyond households, the return to routine has replaced or placed renewed pressure on transport systems. Informal traders and working parents juggling early mornings, long commutes, and rising daily expenses. Now, from taxi ranks to tuck shops, the back-to-school economy is in motion, revealing both opportunity and inequality. But while families adjust, the national picture continues to evolve, from public health responses and housing development to economic recovery efforts and community safety. Namibia enters 2026 facing complex realities and demand informed discussion and decisive action. Now, right here on The Radar, we go beyond the surface. We connect the dots between policy decisions and lived experiences, between headlines and the people they affect, from city streets to rural home streets, from 1300 hours to 1430 Monday through Friday. We bring you trusted analysis, credible voices, and conversations that matter, conversations that don't just inform but empower as well. Now, today's program, of course, we will turn spotlight on the realities shaping everyday life in the new year, the rising cost of living, public health updates, housing and service delivery developments, and what this means for Namibian households trying to make end meet, and starting with something as simple yet as telling as what goes into lunchbox. Now, you can tune in all Eagle FM frequencies, stream us live via the Eagle FM website, or download the Eagle FM app and join in on the conversation through our WhatsApp channel for updates, discussions, and audience polls. So wherever you are, in traffic, at work, or at home, stay with us. This is where Namibia pauses, reflects, and plans its future, because right here on The Radar, the truth is never out of reach. And of course, let's get right into today's top stories. At the government information sharing session today, a review on public safety during the 2025 festive season in the Erongo region was well underway, alongside Senior Inspector Judith Shamungula, who is the head of Community Policing Subdivision, Erongo Region. Now, the 2025 festive season in the Erongo region was marked by heightened population movement, increased economic activity, and intensified pressure on public safety systems, as well as coastal towns attracted holidaymakers from across the country and beyond. Now, towns such as Swakopmund, Vavis Bay, Hentis Bay, and surrounding areas experienced a significant influx of visitors, placing law enforcement, emergency services, and local authorities on high alert. Crime prevention, on the other hand, remained a key focus throughout the festive period. Law enforcement agencies increased visibility through roadblocks, patrols, and joint operations, particularly in tourist hotspots, residential areas, and entertainment districts. Now, while visible policing contributed to deterrence, incidents of opportunistic crime, including theft from vehicles, house breakings, and alcohol-related disturbances, were also reported. Authorities noted that most reported crimes were preventable, often linked to unattended property, excessive alcohol consumption, and overcrowded social spaces. Now, gender-based violence and domestic violence disputes also remained a concern during the festive season, reflecting broader national challenges linked to alcohol abuse, economic stress, and family dynamics. Community policing forums and civil society organizations played a role in awareness campaigns and victim support through calls for stronger preventative intervention remain. And road safety, on another hand, was another major concern as traffic volumes surged along key routes leading into and within the region. Increased patrols, sobriety testing, and speed enforcement were implemented in an effort to reduce accidents. Now, despite these measures, road crashes, some resulting in serious injuries and fatalities, were recorded. Contributing factors included speeding, reckless driving, fatigue or driving while fatigued, and driving under the influence of alcohol. Now, authorities emphasized that while enforcement is necessary, road safety ultimately depends on responsible driver behavior. I think we've become familiar with the Motor Vehicle Accident Fund, having given a statistic around about the other year of 2024 that 72% of road accidents is due to human behavior. Now, the festive season once again highlighted the need for sustained road safety education, improved infrastructure, and stricter adherence to traffic laws beyond peak holiday seasons. Now, as a coastal region, Erongo faced additional public safety challenges related to marine and beach activities. Now, increased recreational boating, fishing, swimming, and beach gatherings led to several sea-related incidents. Emergency services and maritime authorities responded to cases involving drownings, near drownings, boating mishaps, and individuals caught in dangerous ocean conditions. And authorities retaliated warnings about strong currents, cold water temperatures, 4G conditions, and dangers of alcohol consumption while engaging in water activities. Of course, not to forget some children who were abandoned by their parents at the coastal area. Now, lifeguard services and public awareness campaigns proved critical, yet gaps in compliance and public caution were evident. There's always those ones that, despite the warnings, would not really take caution of them. Now, emergency response teams, including police, medical services, disaster risk management units, and volunteer organizations, were placed on high readiness throughout the festive period. Interagency coordination was strengthened through joint operations and rapid response mechanisms. While response times and coordination were generally effective, resource limitations and increased demand highlighted the need for long-term capacity strengthening. Of course, now let's take a listen to Senior Inspector Judith Shomungula. She's the head of community policing and subdivision in Erongo region, speaking at the government information sharing session, speaking about reviewing the festive season of 2025 that is in Erongo region, which obviously noticed an influx of holiday visitors that time around. Let's take a listen.
But let me focus on the three above mandates to accommodate your question. Some of the Namibian Police Force mandate is to maintain law and order, prevent crime, and to ensure the safety and security of all residents and all visitors in our country. During higher activity periods such as 2025 festive season, these mandates were intensified through Namibian, but let me focus on the three above mandates to accommodate your question. Some of the Namibian Police Force mandate is to maintain law and order, prevent crime, and to ensure the safety and security of all residents and all visitors in our country. During higher activity periods such as 2025 festive season, these mandates were intensified through proactive policing measures aimed to prevention crime before it occurs, managing increased population movement as it was very, very overcrowded, ensuring safety on roads, beaches, residential areas, as well as public spaces providing rapid response to emergency. The festive season is therefore treated as a higher risk operational period, requiring visible policing, intelligent-led operations, and close coordination with stakeholders. Yeah, we really work very, very, very close with our stakeholders. That now we mean municipality traffic, community against crime, that is now our community policing structures. Yeah, MVAs, just to mention a few. Yes.
Thank you, Lastinia. You said this is a high operation period, and perhaps at this point...
But let me focus on the three above mandates to accommodate your question. Some of the Namibian Police Force mandate is to maintain law and order, prevent crime, and to ensure the safety and security of all residents and all visitors in our country. During higher activity periods such as 2025 festive season,
save so much more in 2026 at WB. Get 1 liter Clover Ultra UHT milk for $19.99. 1 kg Top Score Instant Maize for only $23.99. 500 gram Bacomo Cornflakes for only $29.99. And 8 Twin Saver 300 sheet 1 ply toilet rolls for only $33.99. See more January specials at vurmanbrock.com. We care.
Policing measures aimed to prevention crime before it occurs, managing increased population movement as it was very, very overcrowded, ensuring safety on roads, beaches, residentials, area, as well as public spaces, providing rapid response to emergency. The festive season is therefore treated as a higher risk operational period, requiring visible policing, intelligent-led operations, and close coordination with stakeholders. Yeah, we really work very, very, very close with our stakeholders. That now we mean municipality traffic, community against crime, that is now our community policing structures. Yeah, MVAs, just to mention a few. Yes.
Thank you, Lastinia. You said this is a high operation period, and perhaps at this point, leading into the 2025 festive season,
yes,
what specific safety and crime prevention?
But let me focus on the three above mandates to accommodate your question. Some of the Namibian Police Force mandate is to maintain law and order, prevent crime, and to ensure the safety and security of all residents and all visitors in our country. During higher activity periods such as 2025 festive season, these mandates were intensified through proactive policing measures aimed to prevention crime before it occurs, managing increased population movement as it was very, very overcrowded, ensuring safety on roads, beaches, residentials, area, as well as public spaces, providing rapid response to emergency. The festive season is therefore treated as a higher risk operational period, requiring visible policing, intelligent-led operations, and close coordination with stakeholders. Yeah, we really work very, very, very close with our stakeholders. That now we mean municipality traffic, community against crime, that is now our community policing structures. Yeah, MVAs, just to mention a few. Yes.
Thank you, Lastinia. You said this is a high operation period, and perhaps at this point, leading into the 2025 festive season,
yes,
what specific safety and crime prevention operations were put in place?
But let me focus on the three above mandates to accommodate your question. Some of the Namibian Police Force mandate is to maintain law and order, prevent crime and to ensure the safety and security of all residents and all visitors in our country. During higher activity periods such as 2025 festive season, these mandates were intensified through proactive policing measures aimed to prevention crime before it occurs, managing increased population movement as it was very, very overcrowded, ensuring safety on roads, beaches, residentials, area, as well as public spaces, providing rapid response to emergency. The festive season is therefore treated as a higher risk operational period, requiring visible policing, intelligent-led operations, and close coordination with stakeholders. Yeah, we really work very, very, very close with our stakeholders. That now we mean municipality traffic, community against crime, that is now our community policing structures. Yeah, MVAs, just to mention a few. Yes.
Thank you, Lastinia. You said this is a high operation period, and perhaps at this point, leading into the 2025 festive season, what specific safety and crime prevention operations were put in place by the region police, policing division in the Erongo region?
Yes, during the 2025 festive season, the Namibian Police Force in our Erongo region, we implemented a comprehensive festive season operational plans, which now include a 24/7 roadblocks between Arandes. But let me focus on the three above mandates to accommodate your question. Some of the
2025 festive season, what specific
season the Namibian Police Force in our Erongo region, we implemented a comprehensive festive season operational plans, which now include a 24/7 roadblocks between Arandes and Suakopmund and Abad. But let me focus on the three above mandate
operation period, and perhaps at this point, leading into the 2025 festive season, what specific safety and crime prevention operations were put in place by the region police policing division in the Erongo region?
Yes, during the 2025 festive season, the Namibian Police Force in our Erongo region,
let's now hear from Inspector Sarafin Kanjimi.
Indeed, yes, there were household-related incidents that showed notable patterns. I will basically tackle on the five, just to mention a few. Theft was one of it, where theft is the most prevalent household related offense. Although it declined with 10% during this period, theft still remained one of those incidents that were notable, especially at household where things were being left unattended. People were more into going out to public places, places where there were events, and failing to do the basic things of closing the doors, putting alarms, which is already there, secured in that place, and not putting it into place. So in the end, the result was a theft case being reported. Housebreaking and with intent to steal and theft has reduced by 28% during the festive season. Because also the notable trend in this some of these housebreaking cases is that houses were that were left at unattended, in the sense that the owners has traveled for holiday destinations or so, where the ones which were prone and broken into. And then also it's worth noting that some of these housebreaking cases that were reported, we had an incident of a case reported here in Mwandesa in Swakop, where a public member opened a case of housebreaking with the intent to defraud an insurance company. to get money in return. However, we commend the officers of Mondesa for doing a marvelous job by doing thorough investigation and detecting that as they were doing the visiting the crime scene and doing investigation that they were carrying out, they actually find out that it was not indeed a house person was reporting this case to defraud the insurance company. So as the police, we condemn such kind of acts. We are here to enforce the law and to ensure that those that will take chances and do such make false reports to the police, they will be arrested and eventually prosecuted. And then I'll move on to domestic violence cases that were recorded. There was a most significant reduction with 46% compared to 2024 festive season. Although during this period, prolonged alcohol consumption, there was prolonged alcohol consumption, but there was no much violence reported at Homestead. So meaning people were just happy. They were in happy moods, enjoying and not really resorting to violence. And we commend households and members of the community for doing that. We really didn't. 46% compared to the previous year, it's not a walk in the park. It's really effort, meaning people really understand the sense of peace and respecting one another and not resorting to violence in whatever circumstances that they find themselves into. And then on a sad note, in respect of fire incidences, we lost an adult Namibian male in Balbush Bay, where we had an incident reported of a shack or a ghetto structured house that burnt, and this man perished in that fire. I would also like to make it clear that this case, this matter is under investigation. We are still working on it to determine the cause of fire. So, but yeah, that is a sad note, on a sad note from the fire-related incident.
With that being said, let's now pause here for now and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly with yet more news right here on the Reader News Analysis. But also a close off in terms of activities during the festive season. Now, the 2025 festive season underscored the importance of proactive planning, community involvement, and interagency cooperation in managing public safety during peak periods. That is, during peak periods, generally, this is where stakeholders tend to come in or should come in together more strongly, unite more strongly to combat against crime and different sorts of crimes. Another crime that was also detected in Orongo was scams, where people were being scammed of their money or their hard-earned cash, because at this time, it's also called the silly season, and it's at this time that a lot of people fall victim as well in terms of fraud, cybersecurity, phishing, malware, and ransomware, SIM swap, online impersonation. All those things usually become very heightened up or become very common during the festive season, when people tend to be more relaxed and having time with their families, and hence they are not so as vigilant as they ought to be. Also, some people, in terms of overtaking alcohol and drugs, they become intoxicated and forget their bob cards right there at the incident where they were with a lot of people, new people also, that they are meeting complete strangers. And also, of course, you wouldn't know who exactly is in your midst. Now, key lessons include the need for stronger community awareness and personal responsibility, of which I feel like the stakeholders involved are doing their part. But then again, community awareness is something that should run throughout from January to December, and not just when the peak season is approaching us or during the peak season to see, particularly regarding alcohol use and road safety. Enhanced public education on sea and coastal safety as well. That's another issue that needs more public education, just for the people to be more safer in that regard. Now, continued investment in law enforcement visibility and emergency response capacity is also another area that also would need more intervention. Improved data collection to inform targeted interventions. Like, for instance, would want to say, as they shared, as the inspectors shared, some of those, it would have been necessary to also share the data, you know, that the statistics that, the foundings that were done. So as to make a better comparison between maybe the previous year, the previous festive season of 2024, and then the festive season of 2025, and see whether crime increased or decreased. And also it helps to track, looking at the interventions that are being made, whether they're being effective or perhaps another mode or another line of intervention needs to be made. Another thing that also just comes to my mind is the fact that sometimes interventions are being made, but sometimes those interventions are the same repetitive interventions being made. Hence, they lose some sort of impact that it could have on the community and on the people. A different approach and a different form of intervention could also be highly appreciated, and also then the statistics come in to prove which one is doing much better. Is there any improvement, or is there still lagging behind? What needs to be done? Also, another is sustained safety campaigns beyond the festive season. Yeah, all throughout the year. Now, looking ahead, authorities and stakeholders agree that public safety cannot be addressed through enforcement alone. Now, a holistic approach that combines prevention, of course, we know that prevention is better than cure, education, we often see education being directed to adults and not really to children, but then education, not forgetting that these children are going to be tomorrow's adults, and they would best be introduced to this form of awareness, being educated on this form of awareness while still early. Let's say, for instance, about driving, safe driving. If we start to enforce this in the children while early, perhaps we could meet quite a number of them that would have it implemented in their minds. I mean, think about that particular song that you're taught in primary school that's still at the back of your mind. So then it becomes an issue that we can target early. Now, community engagement is also another aspect that also would do well, and also infrastructure development is definitely essential to reducing risk and protecting lives in the Erongo region, and not just in the Erongo region, but all throughout the regions countrywide. The festive season once again served as a reminder that safety is a shared responsibility, indefinitely requiring cooperation between the government, communities, visitors, and individuals alike. So it's both my responsibility and your responsibility to ensure that safety is maintained all throughout the year. With that being said, let's pause here now, take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly. Stay tuned for more right here on the Radar News Analysis.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know, a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events. And basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Meanwhile, the Ministry of Health and Social Services has confirmed ongoing Corolla outbreak in Grootfontein District. The Ministry of Health and Social Services says it has experienced two cholera outbreaks in 2025, with one outbreak in the Kunene region successfully declared over in August 2025. However, the ministry reported that the second outbreak, which was declared in November 2025 in the Grootfontein district of the Otjojotjo region, is still being managed. Now, according to the ministry, as of 12 January 2026, a total of 99 suspected cholera cases have been recorded in the Grootfontein district. Now, of this, 32 cases have been laboratory confirmed. The ministry further confirmed that no fatalities have been recorded to date. Now, health authorities noted that the low number of daily reported cases ranging between 0 and 2 indicates that the outbreak remains relatively small, although transmission is ongoing. The ministry attributed the absence of fatalities to early detection, effective case management by health workers, and the timely health-seeking behavior of affected community members. Now, to contain the outbreak, the ministry has deployed a national multi-sectoral response team to the Otjojotjo region. The response includes intensified disease surveillance, expanded testing, and strengthened case management. The ministry stated that because the outbreak is linked to water, sanitation, and hygiene challenges, it is working closely with partners to improve access to safe water, enhance sanitation services, and ensure proper waste management. Now, with schools having reopened, the ministry is also collaborating with the Ministry of Education, Innovation, Youth, Sports, Arts, and Culture to ensure schools are informed, prepared, and safe. And the ministry emphasized that cholera is often an indicator of broader social development challenges and requires a whole of government and a whole of society approach. It called on government institutions, and that is also non-governmental organizations, community leaders, the media, and the public to work together in order to prevent further transmission. The ministry urged the public to remain calm, but remain vigilant as well, noting that common symptoms of cholera include sudden watery diarrhea and vomiting, which can lead to severe hydration or, pardon me, dehydration if left untreated. Now, members of the public experiencing the symptoms were advised to seek immediate medical attention at the nearest health facility. Now, let's take a listen to the executive director in the Ministry of Health and Social Services, that is Apenda Ithindi, speaking on the matter.
Good afternoon, fellow Namibians. Good afternoon, listeners. The Ministry of Health and Social Services would like to update the public on the cholera outbreak, which was declared in November last year. And really, this is to say that as we have communicated to the public before, Namibia faced two outbreaks of cholera in 2025. The first one was in the Kunene region, which was successfully declared over in August 2025. However, we are currently still managing the second outbreak in the Grootfontein district of Otjojotjo region, which was declared, as I have indicated, towards the end of November last year. Regarding the status of the outbreak in the Grootfontein district, as of January 2026, 2 days ago, we have recorded, or put differently, we have received 99 suspected cases. Out of these 99 suspected cases, 32, and equivalently 32%, are confirmed cholera cases. The good news to the public, to all of us, is that we have recorded zero fatalities. This is testament to the early detection. It's testament to the appropriate management by our health workers and by all stakeholders, and the fact that our people are seeking help quickly. Currently, the outbreak is contained But of course, if the transmission is still occurring, we are recording cases from 0 or 2 maximum on a daily basis. And this is an indication that while the outbreak is contained, the transmission is still ongoing, and therefore it is important for the public, for households in the Grootfontein district, but everywhere in the country, to make sure that we exercise precautionary and preventive measures to ensure that we interrupt this transmission. The ministry is fighting this outbreak aggressively. We have taken a whole of government and a whole of society approach to address this outbreak. We have deployed a national and a multinational response team to the Oshodonjupa region to intensify not only surveillance and testing, but also case management. Because this outbreak is driven by challenges with water, challenges with sanitation and hygiene, we are working closely with development, with partners, with stakeholders, and with the local authorities in the district to provide safe water, to improve sanitation, and to manage waste removal appropriately. With schools just having also reopened, we are working closely and partnering with the Ministry of Education, Innovation, Youth, Sports, Arts and Culture to ensure that the school communities are safe and that they are informed and they are practicing the safe and the preventive measures. The common symptoms, as we have communicated and we repeat to the public, that these common symptoms, that whenever we observe them, we should take immediate action. The common symptoms of cholera include sudden watery diarrhea and vomiting, which can lead to severe dehydration if left untreated and unattended. So please, if you are experiencing any of these symptoms, visit our nearest health facilities immediately. We urge all community members to remain calm and strictly adhere to the following preventive measures whenever, for us really to win this battle as we have done before. So the preventive measures, safe water. We should ensure that always we use safe, treated or boiled water for drinking and for food preparation. Hand hygiene is an important protocol, so wash hands thoroughly with soap and clean running water before eating, before preparing food, and especially after using the toilet, so that we interrupt that transmission mechanism. Thirdly, food safety. Eat food immediately after preparation, serve it hot, and avoid consuming food from unsafe or unverified sources. Fourthly, early action. Immediately seek medical care if you or anyone in your household experiences watery diarrhea, vomiting, or the symptoms that I have just mentioned. And then last but not least, hydration. If diarrhea begins, start drinking oral rehydration solution immediately while on your way to the health facility. If you do not have prepacked oral rehydration solution, prepare a homemade solution, which we can really simply do at a household level by dissolving about 6 level teaspoons of sugar and 1/2 teaspoon of salt into 1 liter of clean, safe drinking water. So as we have always emphasized as the ministry, cholera is an indicator of social development challenges. Therefore, addressing it requires a whole-of-government approach, whole-of-society approaches. So we need to address sanitation challenges. We need to address hygiene to make sure that we keep these protocols going forward. We need the government sectors, the NGOs, the community leaders, and the media to work together so that going forward we do not only eliminate this outbreak, but we are able also to eliminate the occurrence elsewhere within the borders of our country. So for more information, please, you can visit, the public can visit our social media pages on the Ministry of Health and Social Services, or the public could call us on a toll-free number so that they get the information handy and the necessary advice, necessary guidance on what to do. Our toll-free number is 0800100100.
And there you had it from the executive director in the Ministry of Education, pardon me, in the Ministry of Health and Social Services. For now, let's pause here, take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? Either a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Now still speaking also on 2025 festive season review and how also Commerce Region has been faring or has fared in that regard. Joining us in studio telephonically is Sergeant Katiti from City Police. A very good afternoon to you, sir, and welcome to On The Reading Is Analysis.
Afternoon, ma'am. Thank you so much for having me, and compliments of the new year to yourself as well as to the listeners.
Mm-hmm. Now, Sergeant Katiti, since the Government Information Sharing Center made a review in regards to Erongo, and I take it why they chose Erongo because of the influx of holiday people that went there during the festive season, that is 2025. Just then, how perhaps has Commerce Region fared in this regard? How perhaps were crimes and domestic violence and all those related stuff during the festive season of 2025?
Well, thank you very much. In terms of statistics-wise and in comparison to other years and as well as last year, the statistics don't look so bad. Of course, we would want to have quite a massive reduction. However, it's possibly impossible to, practically impossible to, now and then to achieve such kind of statistics. But we've done much better. In comparison to other years, it wasn't as bad. But of course, we would wish for it to be a bit much better. Cases are not so many registered. Of course, the concept of problem solving and community policing is one of the aspects that we often use to try and utilize and also solve matters as opposed to registering cases and so on. And it somewhat has had a good reception. So I believe that in comparison to many other years, this time around, it wasn't as bad. But of course, it also is not so pleasing on the basis that we still happen to register cases here and there, ranging from domestic violence, housebreaking, theft, and so on. And then also on a road traffic perspective, Accidents were not as much. We are pleased for that fact. But of course, we would want to register a low level of accident rate, whether it's during the course of the year or even during the festive season. Windhoek is one of the cities where we have lots of people passing through, heading to the coast, heading to the south, heading to the east also. So obviously the influx of vehicles was quite a lot. And there was a need for us to ensure that we've got the maximum visibility on our roads, especially trunk roads heading to neighboring towns and other areas. And I think we've done quite a good level of enforcement to ensure that, yes, we've got voluntary compliance and definitely members of public or road users alike are doing it. Here and there, we've got offenders that were registered in terms of excessive speeding. Driving under the influence also still remains a concern. So here and there, we've registered cases to that effect. And of course, enforcement has taken place. But one would definitely be a bit pleased with the kind of statistics we recorded this time around.
What could be one of the major reasons why the statistics are not so high for Kumasi region?
Well, of course, it will always be tantamount to the enforcement interventions that are done by the national police, local police, being the Windhoek Municipal Police Service. And then also looking at the fact that we will notice that during festive season in the Kumasi region or in Windhoek alike, you would always find a situation whereby lots of people are more exiting. So the number of residents that you will often find within the city are quite few as opposed to other neighboring towns such as your coastal towns as well as the northern areas of the country. So we always often have lesser residents within the town, and that would also be one of the reasons it would be impacted, in the sense that you wouldn't have record so much cases or statistics related to offences or anything as such.
Sergeant Katiti, perhaps just to the listeners and to the public out there, in terms of combating crime, even from this very beginning of the year now towards going to the festive season of 2026, just perhaps what would you expect from the public in terms of them playing their role to combat crime?
The public is the police and the police is the public. We expect or we would urge members of public to ensure that they are always in constant communication with the police to ensure that we are able to respond to crimes that are, and also to prevent them from happening at any given time. We also urge members of public to just give voluntary compliance in terms of observing the rules and regulations, whether it's municipal bylaws or criminal offenses, just to ensure that they voluntarily comply with the rules and regulations that are stipulated, and always have all emergency numbers that are readily available for, in case of emergency. We are at the beginning of the year, and we also obviously notice that we've got learners that are, or other students that are aspiring students that often register with universities and so on. And during this time, you often have people that are trying to scam people into things like assisting them with placement into schools, and then you must pay somebody. Some of these are scams, and they need good validity.
Yeah.
Let's do things the legitimate way by obviously going to stand in the queue and paying at the school itself and getting a legitimate receipt and things like that. And also things like accommodation are one of the challenges that you often have people migrating from rural areas to come to the city for the purpose of school and employment, whatever the case may be. And you often have people pretending to having advertisements of rooms readily available, and there must be a deposit to be paid in advance for you to secure the room. Some of these are scams and definitely require due diligence. So please ensure that you physically, you do due diligence by ensuring that you physically see the place. Even if you do, make sure that you also are able to maybe fish around for extra information to ensure that you are legitimately working with the owner of the house or the person responsible, and avoid taking such kind of risks. Let's avoid high level of cash withdrawals at ATMs, and ensure that we are able to do cashless transactions, just to ensure that you don't get yourself into a situation whereby people are taking your money or anything as such. Also, those are some of the tips that we can always ensure. On the road traffic perspective, we urge road users just to ensure that they provide voluntary compliance in terms of the speed rules and regulations, avoid driving under the influence at any given time, and as well as ensure that you voluntarily comply with all the road traffic signs within the city, and ensure that your vehicle is in a roadworthy condition at any given time. I think in short, that was my recommendation and my thoughts in terms of advice to the members of public.
Okay. Sergeant Katiti, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reader News Analysis. And of course, giving that statistical analysis on what actually has transpired during the 2025 festive season in Commerce Region.
Always a pleasure and always at your service, madam. Thank you for having me.
Okay.
Okay, then.
Mm-hmm. And now with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. Of course, we'll be back with more right here on the Reader News Analysis. Now, should you be interested in partaking in the news, 083-288-401 is the number in studio.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past,
mm.
and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now for some economic indicators before we head over to news beyond the borders of Namibia. Now, $1 today is equals to 16 Namibian dollars and 42 cents. £1 sterling is equals to 22 Namibian dollars and 0.04 cents. £1 Swiss franc is equals to 20 Namibian dollars and 50 cents. $1 Australian dollar is equals to 11 Namibian dollars. £1 Botswana pula, on the other hand, is equals to $1.23. Now let's move cross over for news beyond the borders of Namibia. We're starting off in South Africa on regarding the foot and mouth disease. Now the Agriculture Department in South Africa is decided to embark on a mass vaccination drive.
Impact this plan, bring in now Chief Economist at the Agricultural Business Chamber of South Africa in Wandile Sihlobo, who joins us via our video link. Great to have you on the program, sir. Thanks very much indeed for your time. 10 years to bring this disease under control might sound like a long time for people who perhaps don't follow these details as closely as you do. How bad is it looking?
And this is difficult. And I think when people say we are in crisis, they are not exaggerating that. And I think we also perhaps maybe have to have an appreciation of how important the cattle industry or livestock industry is to the South African farming economy. Because when you look at our farming economy, about half of it is livestock and poultry. So we are affected in the most important part of our farming economy. As you said in the insert earlier, 2022 was perhaps maybe when all of this started really getting worse. At the time, about 6 of our 9 provinces were affected at the same time for the first time in history. And of course, right now, it has spread to a number of provinces. And this presents then challenges for both the commercial farmers, but also those that are small scale and medium scale farmers, because it means then that the auctions that would typically take place and they would sell their livestock in, those have dried up in a number of provinces. So that is putting a lot of financial pressure on the farmers. But I think the most important thing then is about how fast can we be in rolling out this vaccine. And I think all of the details that were unveiled yesterday, they promised that at least we can get some bit of some momentum on ensuring that we interrupt to this transmission, because at the moment it is quite challenging for the farming sector.
Yeah, we're told some of those vaccines are being procured from Botswana and Turkey. We'll speak a bit more about the strategy, but just to understand the problem a bit better, it sounds to me that the problem gradually got worse over time. And John Steenhuisen in yesterday's briefing suggesting that lapses in biosecurity measures are partly to blame.
Look, there are lapses in a couple of things. Firstly, I do think that the biosecurity is a problem of anyone in South Africa, everyone in South Africa. Because, I mean, if you think about countries like Australia, when you land or travel from one region to another region there, there's always a greater emphasis that biosecurity must be respected. And I think in South Africa, public awareness and education around this aspect is important because people do move diseases. But also those that own livestock. If you look at a number of our former homelands and in the townships, the movement of animals is also not monitored well. But of course, those that are trading the animals as well, they need to be careful on that. There have been lapses in that perspective, perhaps maybe in the past. The second aspect is also the fact that in the past in South Africa, we had the capability to actually produce the foot and mouth vaccine at the Agricultural Research Council, as well as at the OBP. But we lost that capacity. Now then it's about, and I think that's part of the lapses of the past to say, why did we allow these institutions to fail to an extent that we are now dependent on likes of Botswana, Turkey, and of course, we may be importing even from Argentina. Those are some of the challenges that I think they were alluding to about the lapses, which we need to correct: the education, the management of the movement of animals, as well as the speed at which we can revive our own vaccine production in addition to the import.
Yeah. As we try to course correct, John Steenhuisen speaks of a three-phase plan in the main, first of stabilization, then consolidation and vaccination. Does that sound watertight to you?
It does sound watertight. I mean, look, there is nothing as urgent at the moment as vaccination because people are bleeding on their cash-wise if you're looking and talking to various feedlots. So, and you remember, this has interrupted also South Africa's long-term plans. We had this strategy of saying we want to be one of the important stakeholders in the beef exports in the world market. And for some time, we began seeing momentum on the beef exports to the Middle East and the other regions. But as always, when you have some of these diseases, you then are kicked out of the export markets temporarily for a certain period. And that's what exactly is happening now. And I think that if it's South Africa, then we can get through the vaccination. Once we have done that, make sure then that the phasing out and the tight surveillance in terms of the spread of the diseases, all of those measures are in place, but also education, both of the farmers and generally South Africans in the public, is something that continues for some time. I think if we apply all of those things, we could get somewhere. But I will emphasize, Anna, that all of this needs to be done quite urgently. There is just no time.
And that is the voice of Chief Economist at the Agricultural Business Chamber of South Africa, Wandile Singh Lobo. Now, also again, an educational aspect on sharing, or parents actually sharing or posting pictures of their children on social media. Things to consider before posting kids' photos. Let's take a listen to that.
To school, and around this time of the year, social media is typically abuzz with proud parents posting adorable pictures of their bundles of joy, so to speak, stepping into the classroom for the first time. This is an example of what is called sharenting, and it refers to sharing parental moments online. Experts, however, are warning that posting children on social media may expose them to serious risks. They say the advent of artificial intelligence significantly increases the dangers associated with sharenting. Just recently, an AI chat box that is a feature on a popular social media platforms came under intense global scrutiny for allowing users essentially to create and share sexualized images, even of children. So what regulatory mechanisms should be devised to safeguard children's safety and their dignity online? Let's try at least answer that question. Bring in social media analyst Diseto Totsetsi, who joins us now via our video link. Great to have you on the program, sir. Welcome to the SABC News Channel. It's an innocent moment, right? You're a proud parent. You're sharing this milestone of your parenthood. But of course, we know that there are some people who are watching who aren't as pure in their intentions.
Yes. So, good morning. This is called AI generated child sexual abuse material, right? It's called AI CSAM. And basically what happens here is someone sitting in a dark room somewhere, having access to your pictures, to your child's pictures, and being able to do things that are inappropriate, and basically using your child's images in order to achieve a certain sexual goal.
Yeah. And of course, for some people who might not have thought about this for a long time, you might think to yourself, ach, the child can go about their schooling career and not be affected by that. The difficulty, of course, is that one day this child grows up and may come across these altered images of themselves. And then you start seeing a material impact on the child themselves.
So that's very long term, right? Short term is that bullies exist at school, right? Bullies exist within the context of the school. Secondly, your child, your son or your daughter's colleagues inside the school do not understand the context, the concept of AI and the context in which we live. So they see this AI generated image of your child where the uniform has been removed and replaced with something else, sometimes nothing. And they do not realize that there may be an adult who is in a dark room doing bad things, who created this thing. They see the child's picture and they bully your child based on that. Your child grows up, is in an interview somewhere, background check, that picture comes through, right? You may have seen, it can also be used for things like revenge, P-O-R-N, which also becomes a thing later where your child now is being extorted, your child is now being bullied, your child now has to perform certain deeds in order for those pictures to not reach certain places or to not get unhidden. So the risk is not only in the future where the picture comes up. The risk is also in the now, and it's a bigger risk because this is developmental stages, right, where the child might get bullied because of AI-generated imaging.
Yeah. What then does a proud parent do wanting to share this moment? Does making my account private go far enough, for example?
So, again, the reason why we post these is to be part of, it's a social inclusion thing, right? Mm. Everybody's doing it. There's this great moment where us present dads and present moms are sharing things, and it's a good thing. And you want the social inclusion. You want to be part of that, right? But the key is to not think of only the moment. Because when you think of only the moment, then you put your child in danger. There are settings on, basically, your child at under the age of 18, the only people that should have access to that child is you and your family, right? Maybe extended family. So you can adjust your settings on social media to reflect that. You can make your social media private for that specific post, right? You can maybe only expose it to even on this green social media platform that we chat on. There's actually people that you can allow only certain people that you trust to view it and disallow others. So there are measures that you can take as a parent to make sure that your child is fine.
Yeah. Once the picture is out there, what are the chances that the person who posted it has any control at the stage?
Oof. So we have a problem on social media right now, which is the content moderation is really weak, right? Which is the reason why I keep getting called back on the channel, because content moderation.
Let's now switch over to Uganda as Uganda heads to the polls today. Uganda's business community is hoping for calmness as voting begins.
At a roadside garage in Kampala, mechanic John Bosco Kimeze works at his garage as Uganda enters the final stretch before elections scheduled for Thursday. For small business owners like him, election periods have often meant interruptions, closures, and lost income.
Zukira Bobi Wine yali ayitawo so manya abeera n'abantu bangi biki I remember when Bobi Wine was passing through here, you know, he moved with a high number of people, and there was a lot of tear gas. It really affected us here. Businesses closed because there was tear gas all over the place. Even if we were not part of them, it was a dead day for business.
Kimeze says clashes during past campaigns have kept customers away, cutting off earnings for workers who depend on daily income. He worries similar tensions could return on voting day.
The fact that the government is telling people to vote and go home, and then the opposition is telling them to stay at the polling station, I see misunderstandings which are going to cause problems between the security forces and the people. What I say, everyone should go back home after voting so that we can also stay working and move forward.
Beyond election day disruptions, small-scale workers remain hopeful that the next government will address long-standing concerns.
We want the new government to consider us the people in garages, not the big investors, because we do our work, but we do not have insurance. I can be working under the car and it falls, yet I have no insurance. When my hand breaks, the next day, I won't have anything to eat.
Ataniabe Kawoshbe, another small business owner, shares similar concerns.
I am worried that there might be inflation, that there might be violence that could affect businesses, but I pray that the leaders that we are pushing into power are more sensitive to protect our concerns above their own personal interests.
Across Kampala's markets, traders say customers often stay away during election periods, slowing trade, as security tightens and political rallies draw crowds. Uganda has been ruled since 1986 by Museveni, and critics say political freedoms have narrowed, while the government says restrictions are necessary to maintain order. Analysts say the vote comes amid broader questions about Uganda's future.
We still have a very big challenge as a nation when it comes to the politics of transition. And I think that's the most important thing currently. So if we want to open a new chapter for this country, all sides of the political divide have got to agree that we need to sit, discuss soberly how we want to see Uganda in the next so many years.
As election day approaches, business owners in Kampala say their priority is stability, hoping the vote passes peacefully so daily life and work can continue. Ian Kenyo, CGTN.
Now then, Bethwell Cheriot is a cybersecurity professional. He's joining us live on the program tonight from Eldoret. It's a city about 300 kilometers west of the Kenyan capital. Bethwell, welcome to the program tonight. Let's start with the mechanics of how exactly an internet shutdown on this scale is done. When the Ugandan Communications Commission tells ISPs to limit internet traffic, how exactly do they do that?
Yeah, thank you, Ramayang. My name is Bethel Cheriot. So there are several ways that the ISPs can limit internet traffic, like the case in Uganda. The common one is the IP address blocking. This is where the internet service providers configure their routers and firewalls to drop data. So that, for example, internet data, which is distant for some IP addresses, are blacklisted. So when you want to access those IP addresses, they are blacklisted. So in one case, they can say they have blacklisted social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter. So when you block the IP addresses of those websites, they cannot be able to go. The internet traffic cannot be able to access those websites. The other one is DNS filtering or tampering. You know, there is a domain name system. Domain name system is a way whereby several websites are identified, you know. Mostly you can use the IP address, but then the DNS is one of which gives that a specific domain. So when an ISP is told to block, they can do DNS filtering or tampering. So when you try to access that specific domain, the DNS will give an incorrect or a non-existent IP address.
Right.
So, yes, the other one is a DPI, the deep packet inspection. This is more of an advanced method. And in critical conditions, they do the total network disconnection, like having a physical gateway shutdown. This is more in very, very extreme situations.
So we're still seeing some government accounts tweeting, from Uganda that is, tweeting. The communications regulator, for example, put out this notice about that internet shutdown 6 hours ago, even though the internet shutdown actually happened yesterday at 6 p.m. local time. Are there ways around these restrictions on getting access to the internet?
Yes, Ramanyang, thank you for that. We have to understand that when the government has actually done internet downtime, there are several ways that the blackout applies. This is including the mobile broadband, the fiber optic connectivity, the leased line, the fixed line, and the microwave links, and satellite access. But then these different technologies, an important thing is that they are a way you can be able to circumvent. The common way that people in Uganda, for example, are circumventing is the use of virtual private networks, the VPNs. So this is the most common and effective method where they create a tunnel between the user's device and the remote server. So this masks the IP address and away from the government surveillance. It's also important to know that the UCC has ordered that all the VPNs to be disabled. So the government itself can still be able to use some VPNs. Now, the other way is a whitelisted access. Remember, this is an election period, and essential services such as the electoral commission systems are usually placed on a whitelist. So with a whitelist access, this still enables some secure, dedicated connectivity. So this is the common one that it's being able to be used. And we have seen a lot of residents being using satellite internet. So Starlink has actually gotten a lot of usage. So this provides an alternative way where people are able to bypass.
Right.
Let's switch over to Tanzania now, as Tanzania sets sights on higher investment and growth in 2026.
Last year, Tanzania registered nearly $11 billion in new investments through more than 900 registered projects, expected to generate about 160,000 jobs. This is a significant increase on the $9.3 billion attracted in 2024. According to the government, the success is down to the structure of the economy.
We are not a country that depends on just one sector to grow our economy. If it's agriculture, we are there. If it's industry, we are there. If it's mining, energy, transport, or tourism, we are there. Our economy is extremely diversified, and this is what many investors look for.
Eyeing more growth in 2026, the government says it is implementing some old as well as new ideas.
We will continue to put in place an enabling environment to start and grow businesses and industries. We will emphasize the formalization of informal businesses, encourage and oversee quality control measures, the use of standards, fair competition in the marketplace, and conduct market research to ensure productivity and investment growth.
As part of its strategy to position Tanzania as an attractive proposition to foreign money, the government merged different departments that deal with foreign trade and investment last year. That, it's hoped, will boost both efficiency and investment.
According to the United Nations, Tanzania has in recent years consistently ranked among the top 10 to 11 African countries for foreign direct investment. To grow further, the government says it is looking to make regulations and processes governing businesses and industries in the country faster and clearer, and in some cases, loosen or remove them.
This year, the government says it plans to focus on private sector-led growth in agriculture, manufacturing, mining, tourism, and the digital economy.
encouraging increased investment from local sources.
Everyone who became an investor, yes, they may have borrowed money, but they started by saving. That's why there are regions in Tanzania where people began as cobblers, and after some years, they own supermarkets. It's all a question of saving. The investment regulator, therefore, has a role in educating the public.
However, analysts argue that some investors have been overrated, failing to live up to promises of job creation and broad-based economic growth. In response, the government says that going forward, incentives will only be extended to investors who create jobs, export value-added products, and generate revenue for the state. The government believes this will improve household incomes and help build a stronger economy. Isaac Lukando, CGTN, Dar es Salaam.
Africa's stock markets record a stellar year in 2025. Let's take a listen.
African stock markets have had a very stellar performance in 2025, and those trends, by and large, are continuing into the first half of January. Let's take a look at the numbers in aggregate. In 2025, the main indices in Europe, the United States and Japan, and Hong Kong, actually, they ended the year between 16% and 30% higher. Now, even if you strip out the wider American market and just focus on the big tech stocks who are driving a lot of the gains, think of Amazon, Meta, Nvidia, Alphabet, AMD, and so on, members of the so-called Magnificent Seven, the Bloomberg Index tracking those, that was up 23%. Now, compare that to indices in Johannesburg, Lagos, Nairobi, Cairo, Casablanca, even Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. Those ended 2025 between 29% and 52% higher. And these, remember, these are in dollar terms. Based on 2025's strong performance, though, are investors taking a second look at frontier African markets in 2026? Tim Stemmels is the founder of the African Lions Fund. In the 5 years since it was set up, the firm has mainly focused on investing in listed companies in niche spaces like Tanzania and Kenya. When we spoke, I asked him if larger markets on the continent like Nigeria are now attractive, especially after years of painful economic reforms.
Certainly, Nigeria was a market that was sort of uninvestable for me when I started the fund, given that they had a quasi-capital control situation in place with the Naira artificially pegged at a low rate and then the unavailability of dollars for expatriating repatriating funds from investors. So I don't have a large weighting to Nigeria. I have invested there. We do have two positions, and it is our third largest weighting. It's a market that, as you say, has done spectacularly well over the last 12 to 18 months, partly as a result of having been so bombed out, but also they've taken a lot of hard decisions. They've instituted some serious reforms, and I think that's going to continue. So while we don't have as big a weighting to Nigeria as the market indices would in our space, it's certainly a market that we are constructive on, and we're looking to add exposure.
You spoke about inefficiencies in investing in frontier markets a little earlier when we started the conversation, and for a lot of foreign investors, these would be things like the commissions, for example, that would be required to pay if you're coming into specific markets, the ability to open a depository account, for example, and moving cash in and out of these particular countries. You've essentially been able to turn these into your edge in some respects. Walk us through your thought process there.
Yes, I think being here on the ground full time is quite an advantage. A lot of the funds that operate in the same space as me, you know, they run out of London or Cape Town or New York or Chicago, places like that. And although those managers are all extremely talented and watch the space closely and travel out to Africa many, many times each year, it's not quite the same as being on the ground continuously as my team and I are. And that gives us some sort of an edge, not only in sort of getting news flow faster. I mean, it's so inefficient here that sometimes even just reading the newspaper can give you a bit of an edge. I've had instances where that's allowed me to buy stocks ahead of people sort of waking up later in the day in other parts of the world. But you're quite right. Inefficiencies in terms of the way the piping, the plumbing of the markets works is another thing. And you get to understand that a lot better if you spend time on the ground here and deal with the brokers and the custodians and everyone else face to face and get to learn the system that way. I mean, I get a lot of potential investors that balk at just the frictional costs that we have to deal with in these markets. But the way I look at it is they can only go one way, and that's down. And the same happened in every other part of the world back in the day when commissions were lowered and things became easier and more brokers started servicing the market. So I'm hopeful that we also get that here in the Africa frontier markets over the coming 5-10 years.
With respect to 2026, what are your broad macroeconomic concerns, if any, that you have that might affect the stakes that you have in some of these companies? Because just going by the banks that you hold in your portfolio, there's a lot of direct exposure to sovereign risk, given the amount of debt that these banks would be holding, government debt, rather, that these banks would be holding on their books. And by the same token, indirect exposure to consumer sentiment and private sector credit demand. What are your big concerns for the next 12 months?
So I think it's important to note that each Africa frontier market sort of operates on its own cycle. We are in a current period in the markets where there's positive sentiment returning among foreign investors to this part of the world. But if you look at our two largest exposures, Kenya and Tanzania, they're at quite different points in the credit cycle. I think Tanzania is a lot further along, and we are very wary of the credit cycle here, having been in a boom period over the last 5-6 years and very long in the tooth. Kenya, I think, is much earlier. Interest rates are coming down from very high levels. I do have concerns still about Kenya's sovereign risk and the fact that real interest rates are so high that many businesses just put off investment plans until, you know, rates are cut or the liquidity situation changes.
And now for some international news. Donald Trump says Iran has no plan for executions as the U.S. urges personnel to leave ME base. Let's take a listen.
We begin tonight with Iranian authorities closing their airspace for several hours this evening and the world waiting for what, if anything, might come next. The airspace reopened just before airtime, but take a look. This is what the skies over Iran looked like also as of a few moments ago. As you can see, air traffic is going north and south of the country, not over it. Now, a number of Western countries have also advised citizens to leave Iran using, as Spain's government put it today, any available means. Additionally, some personnel of the U.S. airbase in Qatar have been urged to leave, according to a U.S. official who spoke to CNN earlier. Also tonight, a warning from Iran and a chilling assessment from its hardline regime of its crackdown on dissent, which has now taken upwards of 2,400 lives. That's according to a U.S.-based human rights group. The full number may not be known. Here's what Iran's foreign minister told Fox News' Brett Baer.
My message is, do not repeat the same mistake that you did in June. You know, if you try a failed experience, you will get the same result.
Well, the foreign minister is talking about the strikes on his country's nuclear sites, which Iran claims did not significantly set back their effort. The President Trump says otherwise, obviously. And here's what the foreign minister said about his government's bloody repression of the biggest uprising since the revolution that swept Islamic hardliners into power in 1979.
After 3 days of terrorist operation, now there is a calm. We are in full control.
Whether that's true or not, graphic evidence has certainly emerged showing what the regime has been doing to try and regain control. Images like these, the dead in body bags overflowing morgues lined up row after row outside. Amnesty International, which analyzed video and photos from 10 Iranian cities, including Tehran, said today that, quote, mass unlawful killings, in their words, are being committed on what it calls a, quote, unprecedented scale, which, as you know, the president has repeatedly suggested could trigger an American military response.
On Iran, have they crossed your red line yet to trigger a response?
Well, no, they're starting to, it looks like, and there seem to be some people killed that aren't supposed to be killed. These are violent, if you call them leaders, I don't know if they're leaders or just they rule through violence. But we're looking at it very seriously. The military is looking at it. and we're looking at some very strong options. We'll make a determination.
That was Sunday night. By yesterday morning, he was on social media saying, quote, Iranian patriots keep protesting and telling them in all caps, help is on the way. Now, he repeated those words on camera later that afternoon.
To all Iranian patriots, keep protesting, take over your institutions if possible, and save the name of the killers and the abusers that are abusing you. You're being very badly abused. I say save their names because they'll pay a very big price. Then I've canceled all meetings with the Iranian officials until the senseless killing of protesters stops. And all I say to them is help is on its way.
The president also said the United States would take, quote, very strong action if the regime hanged a 26-year-old protester named Irfan Soltani. Tonight, in that interview on Fox, Iran's foreign minister said there will be no hanging, in his words, today or tomorrow. As for the president, he signaled as much this afternoon, appeared to back away from any red lines.
We have been notified and pretty strongly, but we'll find out what that all means. But we've been told that the killing in Iran is stopping, and it's stopped, and it's stopping. And there's no plan for executions or executions. So I've been told that a good authority will find out about it. I'm sure if it happens, we'll all be very upset, including you will be very upset. But that's just gotten to me from information that the killing has stopped, that the executions have stopped. They're not going to have an execution, which a lot of people were talking about for the last couple of days. Today was going to be the day of execution.
Well, that said, when pressed, he declined to take military action off the table, saying instead he would, quote, watch and see what the process is. We start tonight with Caitlin Collins, CNN's chief White House correspondent and the anchor of The Source. So is it clear where the president stands tonight on possible military action, why he seems so confident that the Iranian regime won't execute protesters?
Not really, Anderson. And that moment was from when we had first gotten in the Oval Office. The president gave us that update on Iran. Later, when he was taking questions from reporters, I asked him who it was that relayed that information to him that the killings have stopped there, because obviously there's been a major blackout, a huge internet outage there. We really haven't been able to get a ton of reliable information out of what's happening on the ground in Iran. We've seen snippets of it. The president never disclosed who told him that the killing had stopped. He said it was from a source with information.
And with that, we have come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkona Nadingi program brought to you by Lose Shimi. And of course, I sign out here. And also do stay tuned for the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut from 16:30. Don't forget the Business Economic segment from 1800 Hours with David Shombe. From Indafa, happy Jojo, it is goodbye. Have yourself a wonderful afternoon.